There is quite a famous case of compensation that the U.S. Congress did manage to agree to. That is compensating the Japanese Americans who had been interned during World War II. Compensation was actually offered to the individuals who had been disadvantaged. Probably not enough to pay for the disadvantages they suffered, but nevertheless, it was offered.
A different case, though, isn't it? Because they're the actual people themselves.
That's right. And I was going to say, that's a case where compensation seems obviously something to do. But when the actual people aren't present, when it's just the wounds of history that are affecting their descendants, and when the harm isn't just taking away property, which is what the Japanese have suffered, but as well as being interned, whole culture being destroyed, communities being uprooted and also destroyed, people being demoralized by the various disadvantages that their community is suffering, when all that is taking place, it's not obvious that compensation, as you were talking about it, is the thing to do.
Mm. No, I don't know what it achieves.
Yeah.
I get the symbolic function of it that you describe, Scott.
Yeah, but if you also think about what took place in Germany, I mean, the bringing together of compensation, of national symbolic memorials, of widespread education programs. I mean, all of these things, it seems to me, working in harness so that the nation can never quite get beyond it. I think that becomes something rather more productive, doesn't it?
Well, I think it's probably the most productive case, although some Jewish survivors thought this was just blood money.
Yeah.
You know, that it wasn't offering money for the kinds of harms that people suffered in the Holocaust. Is just something obscene about it. But nevertheless, Israel took the money.
Well, yeah, so what if it wasn't money, but it was land?
Yeah.
Different sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Which is what some of the Armenians are wanting from the Turkish state.
Yeah, or indeed, I suppose, what you could say some indigenous people are asking from the Australian state.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the idea of native title.
Yeah, that's right.
But even native title is problematic.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Right, because A, it's not a superior form of title to, it's easily extinguished. It's extinguished at the hands of the colonizer.
Well, furthermore, it's always going to be public land. It's never going to be private land.
It doesn't in any way compete with private property.
No.
Yet, if you were to do a proper reparation on the issue of land ownership, you would dismantle the entire nation of Australia and its entire...
Well, we can't all go back to where we came from or where our ancestors came from.
Yeah. And then the other fact we haven't touched on, which I suspect is a much bigger and very different conversation, is to what extent do we have to factor in the norms, the political norms of the age? So you take colonisation. It's not like colonisation was something that was a uniquely British concept that has no parallels in history or anything like that. I mean, there are differences between conquest and colonization, but it emerges after a time of a foreign policy based on mutual war. So then, and how far back would you go exactly? Like, I was in Peru recently, and it's interesting talking to Peruvians, indigenous Peruvians, who are very proud of the heritage of the Incas. And I guess some of them, particularly if they're more scholarly, were, you know, they didn't like the Spanish very much for what they did. But then the Incans only existed because they conquered everybody else.
Yes.
That's right. Yes. If you go back, there's always, probably some Aboriginal communities wiped out other Aboriginal communities.
Well, I don't know the history of Indigenous conquest in Australia.
It may well be the case. So
then what?
So I think you don't go back that far.
Why not, though? Isn't it artificial?
I think you're always dealing with the present.
Right.
You're always dealing with present disadvantages and where they directly came from, and you start there. So you start, as far as Australia is concerned, with the way in which colonizers disrupted communities, took over land and that sort of thing, and the disadvantages that present people suffer because of that. So I think all these things about all compensation has to be relevant to the present situation. It can't be that sort of abstract theoretical stuff, well, who did what to who?
Yeah.
The Romans might have done that too.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the
Normans conquered England.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
One of the other accidents of history, though, that I think is conspicuous is that exactly the time that the civil rights movement was gaining steam and having political effect, the institutions of civil society, the notions of civic solidarity were eroding and almost disappearing entirely in the United States. And so, you know, so much of the heavy lifting of kind of the local application, local effect being given to desegregation, most of the heavy lifting had to be done by civic institutions, by local community organizations. And the very fact that they're eroding at exactly the time that desegregation is, if you like, being made law, it almost robbed the civil rights movement of an effective agent to bring that to bear.
Yes.
Just in other words, it just created resentment.
Yes, and a lot of the segregation remained in effect. I mean, and not unofficially, but undercover, like, well, the recent controversy about the way the police treat people.
I mean, racial and economic segregation, if you like, compounded one another.
Yeah,
it was, you know.
Yes, I was watching a program about, I forget whether it was ABC program or not, about the present situation about black people being killed in greater numbers by police than white people, and about we need another civil rights movement, people were saying. But on the other hand, they don't have a government or a Congress that's able to back that up, happened in the days of the Johnson administration. So you wonder where things are going to go.